Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks. This is a continuation of our Little Liberty Forum series. And I just want to let you know these episodes are going to come out pretty fast, like one after the other. Usually it's like 4 or 5 days between shows. And when I post a bunch close together, people tend to miss them. So please make sure that you saw the episode 200A with Gardner Goldsmith and Kate Baker. Neil from Flaming Freedom is our guest today in a very quick interview. It only lasts about 20 minutes, and I wish this could have gone on a lot longer. He brought up a great point at the end that I wanted to expand on more about how, well, first of all, Neil is the host of a show called Flaming Freedom, which is an LGBT issues show where they look at LGBT issues through the lens of liberty. And I think many of you will listen to Neil and be like, oh, I like that guy a lot. Well, go to flamingfreedom.com, check out his show. And I did invite him to become part of our co-host rotation on the School Sucks live show. So anyway, the thing that I wanted to be able to expand on more that we just couldn't, because we were actually getting kicked out of this room, the staff, this was like almost midnight, and the hotel staff shift ends at midnight, and they had to clean up the room and vacuum, so we got booted out of there. So we couldn't go any further. The show ends, unfortunately, kind of abruptly. But he was talking about how gays and really all minority groups eventually wind up being co-opted by the state. And it kind of lined up nicely with a lot of the stuff that we were talking about with Thaddeus Russell, or you can actually hear Thaddeus Russell, who you're going to hear me talking about a lot. I love this guy, the author of Renegade History of the United States. We have a show coming up with him. But he's talking about how, you know, this umbrella term, gay rights, is really, even though a conservative, if a conservative heard me say this, they would crap their pants and run away crying, is really a conservative idea, right? Because it's trying to subsume this counterculture. It's trying to take over, co-opt this counterculture into the mainstream. Like, what are the things that a lot of people who claim to be for gay rights are fighting for? Well, marriage, this old Puritan conformist institution. I'm sorry if you're married. And of course, what's the joining the military or being openly out in the military? So Neil addresses that, and that's something that we could really do a whole show about. But I'm pretty sure you will hear Neil on the show in the future, so we will have a chance. So a lot of stuff happens in these 20 minutes, and I put a list of shows that expand on the topics that we just brush across because we cover so many things so fast. But episode 144 of School Sucks Podcast, Humanizing Hegel with Richard Grove and Tony Myers, if you want to learn more about Hegel. 155, No Child Left Behind and Other Bipartisan Educational Conspiracies, if you want to hear more about that whole UNESCO thing. And of course, the American Way series, which is like episode 135, I want to say 134, 135, somewhere around there. 134, 135, and 136. So I hope you continue to enjoy our little captures of the Liberty Forum experience, and more stuff is coming very soon. Thanks for listening and take care. Oh, hey, you know what? Before we go, I've just set up a thing where you can subscribe to the bonus content section at schoolsucksproject.com for a whole year for 2 Bitcoin. I learned last night that Bitcoin is never plural. It's just Bitcoin, no matter how many Bitcoin you are talking about. So if you go to the schoolsucksproject.com and you click on the support tab in the main menu there, a little drop down appears and you'll see Bitcoin. You can click there for the instruction. Instructions should be plural, you know. All right. So here we go. Oh, and Just one more thing before we start the show. There is going to be a point close to the end, almost at the end, where Neil asks, how vulgar can he be on this show? Well, if you are easily offended, if you are listening with children, that would be a good time to move on to the next thing in your queue. All right. So, tell us a story.
What kind of school did you go to, Neil?
I went to my local high school that I would have otherwise been assigned to, albeit we had a program called the International Baccalaureate Program, which I don't know if you've heard of, but
no,
it
never.
Is actually developed by UNESCO. the United Nations.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, economic and social cultural organization.
So UNESCO is often implicated in Agenda 21, which a lot of people are talking about now, like even in New Hampshire, like how somebody, I don't want to say their name, but somebody I know is on a school board, and they're talking about how, I mean, are you familiar with Agenda 21?
Yeah.
So just in a real nutshell, this is kind of this United Nations creation. The euphemism that's often used is sustainable development. So how are we going to save the world from ourselves? And how can we control people better?
People are humans are evil. And by necessity, anything that they produce has harm on the environment. Okay, so how do we minimize the impact? Well, we buy up all the available land, and then we create corridors for human activity, basically restricting humans to certain areas of the country or county.
All right, and this is real stuff. I mean, this, like, I think it was called Agenda 21 because they said, look, this is a shitty plan, right? So let's call it Agenda 21. So then when people talk about it, they'll be like, oh, yeah, Agenda 21. Okay, Emperor Palpatine. There's really something called Agenda 21.
Sounds so conspiratorial.
Yeah, but the euphemisms of sustainable development is often one that's used. And multiculturalism, as far as like lending, make a global village, all of that talk came out of, and a lot of the global warming stuff too, came out of UNESCO Agenda 21. And this, I mean, this gets pretty dark. Like, people living in apartment buildings along railroad tracks, you know? This would be the perfectly planned human management system. That's going to be picked up by the mics. Sorry, I should have known that they were going to be cleaning this room up after we left, so I apologize for some of the noise.
You know, they didn't necessarily push Agenda 21 down our throats as much as you would have thought, but I did have she was an instructor for History of Americas. That was the name of the course that was developed by the International Baccalaureate Program.
Yeah.
And she was very chummy with the students. I mean, she would get very much into their personal lives, you know, chat with them. She didn't maintain the distance necessary for an instructor to have for us to regard her with any sort of professionalism. So we had a lot of fun in her class, but she would glorify Castro, Fidel Castro, and just speak of all of his positive developments in terms of, you know, oh, look at all the great things that he's done in terms of creating hospitals for people and healing the sick and educating the young, and just completely whitewashing the entire history of the Cuban Revolution and Che and internment camps, slave camps, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So that was completely whitewashed. But we had an entire segment called "Single Party Rulers," and she would glorify all these dictators all across the world.
Like, who else? Who else would be on the Castro list of good guys?
Let's see. Pinochet, albeit it was a lot more critical of Pinochet. Joseph Stalin, a lot of whitewashing there. Chairman Mao. There was a lot of whitewashing of Chairman Mao, too. I mean, we did not focus all on those death camps and those tens of millions starved. More of the whole collectivization of education and healthcare.
Those two guys, Mao and Stalin, I mean, when you look at the democide of the 20th century...
They're guilty for...
They say democide, if people are unfamiliar with that term, who might be watching or listening later, is when governments murder their own people, usually while trying to help them or help the greater good. Mm-hmm. So for Mao, it was something called the Great Leap Forward, which sounds like it's going to be great, but led to, and this was, I think, their transition from an agricultural society to a more modern industrial economy in China, and it led to the starvation and death of upwards of 50 million people in about the span of a decade.
Absolutely.
And then Stalin, I mean, Stalin was a little bit more like, yeah, I'm just kill you. You know, like, but for the good of Mother Russia.
And that might have been a paragraph or two within our textbooks, but
sure,
we would a far more focus on the beneficial aspects of socialization that occurred under those single party rulers. They didn't call them dictators. They didn't call them tyrants, just single party rulers, which was interesting to note. Huh. But I had a lot of fun with her, and being so chummy as students were, she got to know our parents, and it was such that I knew she was Mormon, and the History of America starts out with, well, how did people get to the Americas? That's a funny question when you ask a Mormon. our textbook said, humans came from, Native Americans came from Asia across the Bering Strait when there was, ice caps or et cetera. But she taught an alternative history that she suggested was just as likely, saying that people from Israel, perhaps a lost tribe, had gotten on a little boat and sailed to Central America and built pyramids in Central America, a la the Mayans and, Aztecs, etc., just like they did in Egypt. You can see these pyramids in Egypt are very similar to these pyramids built in. So I asked her, is that because of Lehi and Nephi and, all these other people in the Book of Mormon? Oh, my gosh, she got so irate. She called up my parents the next day, and we had a little talk.
But wait, if she was pushing that idea anyway, I mean, that's a Mormon, that's from the Book of Mormon.
There is absolutely no historical evidence to suggest that. That is absolutely from the Book of Mormon, and that's why they suggest that Native Americans exist. And they have this whole history that devolves from that.
So, but she wasn't, but she was open about the fact that she was Mormon.
She was open to the fact that she was Mormon, but not that these ideas were inspired by the Book of Mormon. She suggested actual historical evidence to support that. And you'll find even people from professors from Brigham Young University in the biology department who say, yeah, there's no scientific proof to say that the DNA of Native Americans matched that of Israelites. In fact, they're more, they're closer to Asians than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, oh man, did she become irate at the suggestion that her religion could possibly influence that.
So tell us one more time, just so we understand the setup of this school. Is it a private?
What it was a government school.
Yeah.
Albeit within that school, we had even certain wings that were dedicated to teachers that taught solely IB, International Baccalaureate. And whereas I was really appreciative of the higher level of education that they did expect from us, which was good. I mean, had I been in the regular classes, I would have felt motivated to drop out, get my GED, and go to a community college right away. I mean, I would see students who would pee in the hallway just because they didn't care to find a bathroom. Wow. It was a really terrible rundown school.
Where was this?
This was in Sarasota, Florida.
Yeah.
Didn't you have AP classes like every other high school?
We had AP classes, and interesting to note, my AP European history class was taught by a Marxist, and we were required to read the Communist Manifesto.
With any kind of balance, like here's some, one guy's ideas. This didn't go very well.
He instructed us in the ways of Hegelian dialectical thinking and the complete foundations of Marxism. Yeah.
So Hegel takes from Marx. Marx takes from Hegel,
Right.
In that Marx's Communist Manifesto kind of followed the Hegelian dialectic. And because of that, Hegel is regarded as a genuinely shitty historical character, right? So and Hegel right, becomes like so. Also attached to conspiracy theories like the Hegelian dialectic problem reaction solution, a term that I believe was coined by David Icke, who is the lizard guy.
Oh, yeah.
So Hegelian dialectic, we don't have to get into that here, but Marx was heavily influenced by that as far as how this great economic change would come to be, and capitalism was a term that I think he coined, was a problem that would lead to his ultimate utopian solution. Man, they gave it their best in the 20th century to make it a reality. Just didn't work. We got leap forward in Stalin.
Well,
so,
speaking of epistemology and creating hypotheses and syntheses, we had a theory of knowledge course that was obligatory within the International Baccalaureate program.
Yeah.
And whereas it would be great if they taught us, you know, rational forms of thinking and logic and deductive reasoning. No, they taught us more or less how our senses are completely invalid and how we should absolutely, we should question everything, but that, you know, we had no right to think that anything was a fact. And so there was a course just based around how our senses and forms of reasoning were just completely faulty from the outset, and so how could we possibly know anything?
Wow, see, it's very interesting, and maybe it's because of the beliefs or, you know, the philosophy that you have today that you remember so much of this wackiness from high school, because I don't remember anything. I mean, they could have told me anything in high school. I don't remember what they said. I remember that it was awful. I remember that I hated it and was miserable and was made to feel mm-hmm. defective for not mm-hmm. enjoying it every day. But the detail that you have, I mean, you're not much younger than us, right? You're 25, 26?
I'm greater than a quarter century old now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so you're, you know, almost 10 years younger than me. But, yeah, that's a lot of detail to remember. So this seems like kind of a...
I was turned on, tuned in at that point.
Really?
Yeah, and I was very much a libertarian. In fact, in our high school, we had a high school libertarian club. And so we would have people from the local Libertarian Party come in and talk to us about the gold standard and read Walter Block and also defending the undefensible.
So was it through the Libertarian Club in high school that you first came to understand this stuff? Or
I had prior to that come onto a Libertarian Party booth at a local county fair.
Yeah.
By the local Libertarian Party, and picked up a book in middle school called Libertarianism in One Lesson by David Berglund. I just remember leafing through the pages and just reading it, devouring it, and saying, this is the most rational thing I've, you know, ever come upon. And prior to, I had actually subscribed to the Socialist Labor Party's newsletter. This is back in middle school.
That's interesting, because I wonder if the school, this or this IB program that you were in, kind of bites them in the ass, right? Because it is a curriculum that gets you thinking much more about these like international relations and political issues and economics. But then if you have an awareness of that mm-hmm. at an age when most people don't, most people couldn't give a shit about that stuff at that age, right? I certainly didn't. And I don't remember any of that really being in our education. Like, I remember history, mm-hmm. like reading out of textbooks, but I don't remember hardly ever talking about current events or anything like that.
Yeah, so, we ended up taking a field trip to the United Nations building in New York City as part of our UN club.
But I'm just thinking, if I was 14 or 15 and I walked by a libertarian booth at a fair, mm-hmm. like, I would pay it no mind, you know? So the fact that you were even in tune...
They had balloons. But, yeah, no, I guess for the longest time when I was young, I was looking for a flag to march behind, but I really got tuned in and turned on with libertarianism. And even then, during the 2004 election in high school, I would walk around on my backpack with a Kerry Edwards, you know, rainbow flag pin on my backpack. Even though I considered myself a libertarian, I thought, anyone but Bush, please.
Yeah.
And so it was always fun folding letters in support of Kerry with these little old ladies in the Democratic headquarters office saying, yeah, I'm a libertarian. I really don't believe in this whole political system thing, but, you know, anything to get us out of these wars.
So were you?
Of course, I was completely naive back then.
Were you out in high school, like openly gay?
I was, yeah. Pretty much freshman, sophomore year.
Yeah. So is that how you kind of maybe became more aligned or allied with the Democratic side of things?
It was only a brief dabbling in Kerry Edwards.
Yeah.
And then, you know, beyond that, I was very much involved in the Libertarian Party. I forsake my principles in order to just get us the hell out of that war.
Yeah,
if that would have happened, you know?
Sure, but I mean, even though I was much older than you at the time, I think I became politically aware when George Bush was president. And I mean, mm-hmm. I you know, studied history and was really interested in history from a much younger age. But I remember in 2004 thinking like, well, yeah, this would be... I mean, it was like the last, aside from the Ron Paul stuff, political thought that mm-hmm. I had was 2004. Like, yeah, I guess it would be better if it was this other guy. Because I came to be aware of what the government was really doing while it was, you know, the Red Party, the Republican Party, the Elephant Party in power. So I actually, even with the historical knowledge that I had, I was naive enough to think at the time that maybe this alternative would be better. But I know that the Democratic Party, they don't do a good job from any like logical sincerity or intellectual honesty point of view of aligning themselves with gays or minorities, but they certainly have the rhetoric. So, and the anti-war, yeah, which was really important to me after reading like a lot of Howard Zinn and studying a lot of history, mm-hmm, and then the Iraq War breaks out.
I was a fan of Noam Chomsky for quite some time there, and he makes some valid arguments against this war machine. But then at that point, you can really get suckered into, you know, this whole paradigm of really believing that the state, if only Noam Chomsky or if only I, you know, was in charge of it, I could do a lot better job. And, you know, that's one of the things I find unfortunate about the gay community is that they've gone from, you know, a culture of oppression of, you know, in the 1960s being arrested for pretended crimes of prostitution and, you know, mass arrests. And thankfully they have the Stonewall Uprising of saying, you know, no more, enough is enough. We're going to physically fight back against cops trying to shut down our bar, to now not only becoming ingratiated with a violent monopoly on force, but wanting to take the reins of it and believing that, you know, if only they were in power, they do a much better job. And it seems to happen to pretty much every minority that's ever been oppressed.
Yeah, absolutely. That was, Neil, that was like a really tight 20-minute interview. That was great.
That's cool. Yeah.
I can't believe we've never had you on the show before.
Anytime.
So, well, do you use your whole name on your show?
Yeah, sure.
So,
I don't use my full name on the show necessarily. I just go by Neil.
You go by Neil?
Yeah.
And the show is Flaming Freedom.
Neil from Flaming Freedom, yeah.
And I've talked about it plenty because obviously we use Dale Studio to do my show, but when is it on? Where can people learn more?
Yeah, sure. So if you'd like to tune in to Flaming Freedom, we've got it Tuesday nights at from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern time. And also we do a kind of After Dark podcast.
Yeah.
That's the podcast only. You can check it out on flamingfreedom.com. We have our entire archives there. But I refer to that as Neil's future unelectability podcast just because we cover all sorts of really inappropriate topics.
It's a very racy show. I think I was on a version of it earlier tonight.
You were, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I walked by it. It sounded very potty mouthish.
yeah.
We devolve. Yeah.
It went into some topics that I was uncomfortable with, but I tried to jump in there. But I tried to jump in there, and you know.
You held your own.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. No, I mean, I think your show is great. I think you and Dale have a good dynamic. It's funny. You cover a lot of issues that aren't being covered elsewhere. So I highly recommend people check it out. And I know we've talked about this before, but if I put this out, people in my audience would probably say, you should have that guy on your show more in our third chair, which is often open. So we do it Thursday nights, 6:30. If you ever want to come by, you know, we'd love to have you.
Absolutely.
So. Thanks. I mean, we should set up a rotation for that chair. Like,
sure.
A new person every week for a 4-week rotation, something like that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we can work that out sometime when we're not recording.
Yeah.
But thank you so much. That was was a great story. That was very cool. We talked about UNESCO, and I forget the guy's name. He was some part of some conservative organization, but he got way into all this stuff, and it blew my mind. It was very, very scary. So
you were talking earlier about a mascot. I don't know how vulgar I can be on here because I'm coming from an After Dark episode of
you can say, well, I can edit what you just did into a great 20-minute show,
okay,
and now you can say whatever the you want. And
well, you know, in addition to the Australopithecus. The Homo erectus.
It was a word made so no one could ever pronounce it.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. In addition to the Homo erectus, you should really have him, you know, have DSLs, f***ing lips.
Mm.
Because, you know, school really sucks, and he's got to blow that school ad administrator.
That's good. You know? I would want to make sure. I'll have to
very pert, pucky, you know, puckered lips.
I'd have to do a Google image search for that to see what they
DSLs?
Really look like. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever you think would, you know, feel good, you know, those are DSLs.
Like Angelina Jolie. Is that the kind of lips we're talking about? Or is that...
You know, I'm not within that realm.
No.
No. Whatever is connected to it.
A dude.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. If she were to go into a men's restroom and be on the other side of that hole, then sure.
Then, yeah,
it could be
true.
Anyone, right?
Yeah. That's part of the fun of glory holes in men's rooms. You never know who's on the other side. And that was Neil, so we're going to take a quick time out. Thanks for sticking with us here.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thank you so much.